top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
Nearby?
No, not really.
Where are you going?
I'm headed north. I'm sorry. I've got to go.
It's just going to take
a minute.
I've got
to go. I'm late for a meeting. I'm sorry.
Hey, 911, what's your emergency?
I think I'm being followed.
I know you're close. Are you scared?
Please, just let me go.
Do you think you're the first one to say that?
Let me out of here!
I know fear when I see it. It's all in the eyes. People think they can hide it, but they can't.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 348 of the Really Awful Movies Podcast. 2020's Alone. Pretty terrible title. I recently podcasted the South Korean post-apocalyptic zombie flick called Alive. And what's with these one-note, one-word, two-syllable titles? It's frankly a little bit disappointing right off the bat, but the same cannot be said about this effort. It falls probably a little bit more into the thriller camp that is genre-wise, not the Michael Jackson seminal album and video, but it has more of that kind of made-for-TV thriller vibe, but not in any way a disparaging kind of way. This one came across my radar, certainly not one upon release, which was September of 2020, but rather trolling through the seemingly endless array of streaming service thumbnails, as you want to do in these very warm summer months, trying to find something enticing enough to pass muster and pass the sniff test. And the sniff test is something that inevitably fails when either one of two things happens. It accumulates less than 50% Rotten Tomatoes aggregate vote, although this isn't always a disqualifier, and maybe less than, let's say, 5.5 out of 10 on consensus IMDb review ratings. I mean, usually you got to have one without the other, and sometimes when you have critical and public acclaim going in different directions, you have to sort of choose one or the other. I like to at least try and get a balance of 50% for both. And I think that's fair because, I mean, time is precious and you don't know really what you're getting into. What you're getting into with Alone is a film that starts out with what is, for many people, a horror. Maybe not a thriller, but the horror of moving. And you see what I think is, a first in any of my viewing, which is a POV shot of a U-Haul van and a woman who's about to move away from where she's currently residing, and I think north. So this is a regional horror set in the Pacific Northwest, I believe, in, it looks to me like Portland, but it could be somewhere else in Oregon. Nevertheless, the protagonist, Jessica, she is recently widowed. I believe her her partner has passed away, and she's picking up everything and moving, I think, to Seattle, or let's just say north of Portland somewhere. And that entails packing up everything, all her belongings, choosing, I guess, to part ways with a favorite plant, and cutting off a lot of ties with her family, and just sort of choosing to make this impromptu move in both senses of the term. There's a little bit of development of her character at the outset, and this seems to be a very not well thought out, sort of very extemporaneous move by the recent widow. And she touches base with, I believe, her younger brother, and then she avoids calls from her mom, and then eventually does take them. But this is really her cutting ties with her past life and the difficulties that that entailed. The beginning of this movie is not entirely unlike Steven Spielberg's directorial debut, the famous made-for-TV film where he cut his bones, called Duel, in which you have this vehicle on the road trying to run another one off. So what you have is this cat and mouse game between Jessica, this widow, and this Jeep driver who is played by Ozark's Mark Menchaca, and who bears an almost uncanny resemblance to James Hetfield, the lead singer in Metallica, complete with mutton chops, and I think by way of maybe more of a Jason Sudeikis. It's kind of humorous facial hair, but definitely cuts a figure that has these sort of serial killer type frames for his glasses, and is definitely a real roadside weirdo. So the two of them encounter one another when the mysterious character gets involved in this tete-a-tete, whereby there's this narrow passage and you can't pass on the and there's, of course, 18-wheelers coming the other way, and he nearly causes an accident, causing Jessica to really take stock of things, pull over to the side of the road, and get her bearings again as she pulls into different truck stops and along the way. Now, it looks like this mysterious stranger is a local and is from around rural Oregon. And the two see their paths cross a few more times. And when you always see this in horror is when you have a victim or a protagonist, and they frequently make decisions that go against their well-being and against their better judgment. You can't say this about the Mattias Olsson penned film Alone here, because this character, this is played by Jules Wilcox, about whom I know next to nothing, but she's terrific. The widow character of Jessica makes savvy, street-savvy, and very safety-savvy maneuvers as she has to tackle this character trying to run her off the road. And I think this works in the movie's favor considerably, because she could have put herself in peril very easily, and that would have been the case in a number of these types of films, even if it were, let's say, more of a revenge thriller type thing, which I thought this where this one was actually going to turn. Thankfully, it actually doesn't, but there are a lot of twists and turns in this thing. I mean, you know, metaphorically as well as literally. And the character of the Emerald State of Oregon plays just a wonderful part here. It almost would make you want to do a road trip from, like, British Columbia down to the Pacific Coast Highway down to California. I mean, the lush surroundings and making use of the de rigueur overhead shots via drone, but you very effectively get the sense that there is a dense thicket of trees, and you really are far removed from urbanity or urban life. I mean, you could this really works in the film's favor, because if you're on some sort of very desolate interstate, you can't just pull off on some rural side road and hope to get yourself to safety, because that's going to pull you out of your destination. Ultimately, you're just best to put pedal to the metal. And besides, Jessica has this U-Haul in tow. Yeah, no pun intended there, but yeah, she has to make a sort of safety considerations for the fact that she's towing hundreds of pounds of weight behind her. And I think that makes this thing very effective, because it is remote. There's nowhere to go save for the odd creepy, off the beaten path road stop. But that's, if anyone's done any sort of road trips or long form traveling, you know that you can't just hightail it into some random side road, which might not be paved. It might be even farther removed from the population and from safety. So you have these people and their paths cross. And I'm going to heavily spoil this thing, so if you really do want to check it out, I suggest you do so before tuning in again. But what you have is a the character of the stranger mock breaking down in the middle of one of these rural passes, and he's got his vehicle parked perpendicularly across the road, so Jessica has no choice but to slam the brakes and see what's up. Now, in a bit like, I mean, speaking of Oregon, this is a little bit like Ted Bundy, because the mysterious stranger has his arm in a sling and is possibly trying to do that to humanize himself and to make him seem like he's the one who's vulnerable so that he can better ask for help. And as it turns out later in the narrative, this is not the first woman he's tried to kidnap and murder, and that's something that comes into play later. So a la Bundy, the serial killer whose roots are in the Pacific Northwest, but he does have his arm in a sling, and he does try to lure Jessica out of her vehicle, but she's not having any of it until he forces his way in. And ultimately you have this setup whereby he kidnaps Jessica, and she's in the murder basement. Essentially, she's stuck in some random rural basement. It looks like it's far removed from any sort of civilization. She has some basement windows, so there's a high ceiling, and she's left to her own devices there intermittently. Visited by the stranger, who brings her the odd some toiletries and food and whatnot. Again, this character is very, very resourceful, and unlike other films of this ilk, this takes you in a different direction. So what you have is Jessica, who sees a nail, partly, beaten into a support beam, and she uses her sweater to extricate the nail out of the beam and manages to, wrest open the lock, so for this door, and she manages to escape and run into the woods. So what you think would be like a duel style movie and a highway horror quickly morphs into a survivalist terror as she hightails it into the deep dark brush of Oregon, and eventually steps on some kind of pointed tree branch and injures her foot severely, eventually hurls herself into the rapids, and this movie takes on even a Deliverance kind of feel, the James Dickey novel. But it really, I mean, takes things in different directions. So you have a hunter who appears on the scene, who's a good Samaritan, and who the stranger convinces that Jessica is off her meds, and has people looking out for her best interest because she's got mental health challenges. So there really is, it plays upon the Good Samaritan's good nature, and tries to twist the scenario into something that favors the stranger, and it puts the Good Samaritan into an incredible predicament, which is just one of the many different scenes you don't see coming. I mean, frequently in the horror space you have a Good Samaritan who helps out, and the audience is meant to take a much needed breather, and you could sort of see how this person could play heavily into the protagonist's escape and recovery, only to be murdered by some supernatural force and to be quickly dispatched. Well, this one, you think that's where this could be going, but there, again, so many twists and turns of this film. And the Good Samaritan named Robert, who is out hunting, eventually, meets his maker, unfortunately, as the stranger gets the better of him. And, I mean, this thing, it does fit into, I think, what Jeff and I have discussed in the podcast, something like Unhinged or one of the other Oregon regional type horrors. I mean, this is a box, so this did a box office of only $500,000. This looks very low budget. The film stars a very capable actress in the Jessica role, played by Jules Wilcox, who doesn't even have an entry in Wikipedia. So there's not the most prominent marquee players in this film. The director, and we're going to segue into what we learned here, but the director, John Hyams, has done some of the, I guess, Universal Soldier sequels, and I guess he's got some sort of pedigree because his father, Peter, directed some genre films in the space that many of our listeners will probably be familiar with, like The Presidio and The Relic and Jean-Claude Van Damme in Time Cop. So, I mean... He comes to this one and just has a really deft directorial touch. And I mean, who would have thought when I first encountered this, I saw like a very glaring and very conspicuous 92% Rotten Tomatoes, and I thought, okay, here we go. But I mean, man, does this really, really deliver the goods. And it's interesting when you see, I mean, everyone can relate, at least on these shores, going on a road trip and maybe being on some misbegotten, sort of off the beaten path, dirt road, and not wondering where the hell you are, and maybe concerned about breaking down. I mean, not so much when cell coverage is so ubiquitous, but I remember growing up and losing my way around different, in particular, I remember two streets having the same name, and me being on one of them and not the right one, and being far too west of where I should have been, and encountering some random railway crossing just in the absolute middle of absolute nowhere. And it's a very disconcerting, very, very alienating feeling, and it's something that a movie like The Hitcher will have really played upon. But I mean, for its fault, I mean, you could say that potentially there's a over-reliance on like a, you know, that convention and horror of the lightning flashing and thunder occurring to maybe ratchet up the tension a bit, which I think is unnecessary here, and when you have this showdown between the stranger and Jessica. But it really is used, I think, just to make more manifest the visuals, because anyone who spent any time camping or in a deep dark brush knows that it's incredibly difficult to find anyone, even if you have a flashlight. Hell, it's really difficult just to find your tent and your belongings, and it's easier to stray, very easy to stray off path. And so when you have this almost Hammer horror style corny lightning and thunder, it kind of takes away a little bit from the proceedings. And I think they could have, I think generally speaking, actually, and you could I think in the last 10 years when there's been an over-reliance on let's say post-production touch-up, and I think there's been a lot of sameness in cinematography that's changed since in the last 10 years, but there was a trend with the torture porn era towards a lot of blue hues and that kind of thing in cinematography, and I think it's an artifact of the production process. But a lot can be said about showing very little, and the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a prime example of showing darkness and relying, the viewers needing to rely upon the psychological underpinnings of filling in this gestalt of what is in the space that can't be seen. And I think with Alone in the Middle of the Woods, they could have played upon that, and instead of the corny clapping of thunder and lightning and all that, they could have just had the lone shining spotlight as Jessica cowers in the bush. Another thing when it comes to horror, really, that Friday the 13th and Jason Voorhees accepted, and that killer almost has supernatural predilections and ability to track down anyone, regardless of whether they think they've absconded and disappeared. But if you're in the bush, like, as long as you stay somewhat close to the trail and take cover, no one will find you. I mean, if you just stay put and just hide under some leaves and cover yourself, I mean, it's virtually impossible to find anything. I mean, unless someone's aided by search and rescue dogs or some sort of rescue helicopter, you're fine just staying put. You don't need to constantly find help or look for the road or look to the road, I should say, but you can stay until your the danger is past. Of course, that doesn't make for the most gripping of narratives to film, that's for sure. So yeah, another thing I've learned while we're at it here is, well, it's not listed in the Wikipedia entry, but I noticed something kind of odd, and it's a stupid little detail, but Yardley Smith, the French-born actress who famously plays, I think, Lisa Simpson on The Simpsons, she produces this thing. And I mean, Yardley is a very uncommon name, and that sort of tipped me off right at the beginning. A poster for this one, not maybe the most creative, but it actually does recreate a scene that I thought was really particularly compelling, where you have this shot of a very frazzled and not well rested Jessica looking in the rearview mirror and seeing those lights and coming toward her and the desolate road. So, I mean, she is being tailed. At one point, she tries to call 911 and obviously doesn't know where she is in order to be able to send first responders to be dispatched. So it also has really quite vivid imagery of local rest stops and also these flea bag motels that seem to line these interstates. There's a pretty funny Bill Burr bit about roadside motels and how you're basically just one door away from being murdered, because it's right out into the parking lot essentially. And I think similarly too. And I was thinking back to my own road trip experiences, particularly when some friends of mine and I rented a car, drove down to New Orleans, and we stayed in this really sketchy and horrible establishment called the Petit Motel. And it was within sight line of 3 to 4 bail bonds offices and a short walk from the parish New Orleans State Prison. And the denizens of this place, I think you could tell, were criminally affiliated, shall we say. And we had a rental car, which we frankly are surprised we were able to bring back to Toronto. But we had people banging on our door. There was all sorts of interesting demi-monde elements hanging out late at night at all hours. And one thing that was particularly weird was you had to get your towel through bulletproof glass at the front desk concierge. So this was a scary place, not only the region and this part of New Orleans. This was a very scary accommodations that we selected. Very, very Bates Motel. But anyway, Alone makes amazing use of that. Makes excellent use. I think one of the best uses of remote, like pastoral forest thickets, and it's just the distance that you feel from civilization is really underscored by a terrific scene setting. And with horror so much about place, it really does really well with this. And I think star rating, I mean, I'm gonna have to echo what everyone's saying. I mean, okay, my bad, 95% based on Rotten Tomatoes reviews and Metacritic, it's a little lower, but favorable, and one that's, I think, very well executed with a lot of twists and turns that invests a lot of smart into its victim, who's nobody's victim. She's incredibly resourceful, does everything right, and yet still falls prey to this creeper. And another twist, I guess, before I sign off too, is that this stranger, this creeper, is also a family man, and the denouement factors into that as well. And there's a touching scene where Jessica is cowering behind a door and overhears this guy's conversation with his young daughter and calls her bug and various little affectations. And you see that in addition to him being just a monster, he's compartmentalized the fact that he's a doting dad of a very young girl and a happy, well, family man. I mean, insofar as like the aforementioned Ted Bundy was too, who's a stepdad to a young girl. So the parallels there are evident as well. But this movie, I'm going to give like a solid 3 3/4, almost a 4 of its type. I mean, it really depends on how you whether you favor this kind of thriller or kind of a hybrid film. But I mean, the performances are just so solid, and it's really nice to see someone who is, it just makes all the right moves and is still, I mean, placed in mortal peril. And like, people often accuse, you know, horror films of being misogynistic, which I think is a little bit of addle-brained. And unless you want to maybe justify your terms and say that, if you want to justify, like, maybe define misogynistic as objectifying, you could say yes, in the early 80s, when women were wanted to doff their tops at the slightest moment in order to satisfy prurient interests, then you could say yes, that if you define misogyny thusly. But in more often than not, the final girls are incredibly resourceful, whether it's Laurie Strode the characters in Nightmare on Elm Street, you name it. It really rewards strength and determination, perseverance, and this one does as well. And you have upending of expectations of the stranger hiding in the back seat from Urban Legend. You actually have the protagonist who, in the final showdown, again, the spoiler, manages to jump her antagonist and just beat him off with a tire iron. And really, I mean, there's a really very effective coda to this film as well. And so I highly recommend people check this one out. It's well worth your time as you try and fight your way through the really heavy-duty humidity here. Anyway, hope to talk to everyone soon, and take care. Thank you.